Hello and welcome to this week's Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. And I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at purerockfury. Our choice for the week was the 2013 movie Compulsion. That was directed by, I'm going to try this now, but we'll see, Egidio Cacmiglio. Yeah?
Close enough.
Sounds good to me. Written by Floyd Byers and Sholsu Park. Starring Heather Graham, Carrie-Anne Moss, Kevin Dillon, Joe Mantegna, Kate Trotter, and others. Yeah, I've been reading the director and the one writer's names now for quite a bit just to try and prepare to say them, and I think I kind of nailed it. So, the synopsis is very short and doesn't really explain much about the movie, but I will read it to you either way. The lives of two female neighbors intersect when their individual obsessions begin to unravel. I feel like there's a bit more to it than that, but let's get into it. Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Basically, you have Heather Graham's character, who is Amy, and she is, I want to say, engaged to Kevin Dillon, who is Fred. He is, I don't even remember exactly what his job was, but he made
some kind of business executive.
Yeah, he made some really good money. And in their new condo apartment, whatever, he allowed her to remodel the kitchen to a really fancy, I guess, studio quality kitchen would be the way to put it, because she, in her head, had visions that she was going to have her own cooking show one day, and she's fairly obsessed with food and presentation and, you know, cooking the perfect meal on a daily basis. And then she comes to find out that across the hall lives Carrie-Anne Moss, who plays Saffron. I forget the last name, but Saffron is basically, I don't want to say a washed-up actress, but, you know, she was obviously much popular when she was younger and prettier and not so old. So, you know, to fill her time, now she writes advice columns. I think more of the weren't they like sexual nature?
Yep.
So she basically sits across the hall as a hermit, goes on an occasional audition, and, you know, writes these columns. Is there anything in particular you want to mention here before we dive in, or?
Not really. I mean, that kind of covers at least the character profiles.
Yeah, I mean, outside of these three, there's really, I mean,
Joe Mantegna is like the only other main actor, and he just pops in through random. The movie is all told as like backdated material.
Yeah.
And it all revolves around Joe Mantegna questioning Amy about Saffron disappearing. And the movie is told through flashbacks of how they got to the apartment and blah, 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 blah. So.
Right. So you have him interviewing her in her apartment while she's cooking. Go figure. And, you know, there's flashbacks to the apartment. There's flashbacks to Saffron as a teenager with her very, very, very pushy
Stage mom,
you know, doing some pretty despicable things to allow her daughter to rise in fame, I guess would be the way to put it. So the movie jumps around timeline-wise a lot, but at no point are you going to be like, I don't get what's going on. I mean, it's very fluid the way it is done. It's shot in a way, too, I felt that this is, they didn't try to make it look, I guess, real.
It almost shot like a Downy commercial.
Yeah, like it was shot like it was a set, which was pretty interesting, in my opinion. They pulled it off just fine. There's nothing wrong with the way they did it. It kind of almost highlights the pseudo-craziness of Heather Graham's character in the movie. Because she's obsessed, obviously, about, you know, cooking and food, like we said, but she's also obsessed with trying to make her fiancé happy. And in the beginning, it seems like he's fully supportive and do whatever you need to do. Whatever's going to make you happy is going to make me happy. But then you start to realize that all right, he's kind of a scumbag. He's totally going to cheat on her or is cheating on her. And then he gets to a point where he starts coming home and he pays more attention to his prized bird. I don't know exactly what kind of bird it was. But
African gray parakeet or something like that. Some rare bird that comes from the rainforest or something. There's only, I don't want to say endangered, but it's like a prized bird. It's not just some parakeet you get from the pet store. It's right. Like a wild.
Yeah,
and it's an impressive looking bird or whatever.
By no means is it a cheap pet. So, you know, he starts to show a little more focus on the bird and starts going, you don't have to, you know, make me these elaborate meals every day. I'd be fine with a TV dinner. Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, her whole day basically consists of going down to the, you know, the farm stand or farmer's market, buying the freshest, best ingredients possible, and coming home and cooking an amazing meal for him on a daily basis. And he's just not appreciative of it anymore. That's basically the gist of that. But there's a lot of flashbacks, too. And the way they did the flashbacks with Saffron, I really kind of dug, because while it was in color, Saffron was more so in color, where the rest of every other thing, like the other people, the backgrounds, they were all kind of a bluish hue. They weren't exactly, so like obviously stood out more.
It was kind, in my opinion, made to kind of tell the audience without saying it that she more clearly remembers herself in those moments than the moments themselves. Like the moments and all the things that happened were just a blur of things that have caused her to become the recluse with clear emotional issues that she has now.
Well, yeah, it was the mother, like we said, the besides being the ridiculous stage mom, it was the whole, you can't eat that, you're going to gain weight, you got to blah, blah, blah. And then she took her to some fancy party and basically pawned her off on this old creepy producer dude, even though she was a teenager. She's like, no, you go off with him.
Talk about your career, wink.
Right, yeah, it was probably happens more often than people would like to admit, I guess, in that industry, I would assume. But it was pretty creepy at that point. But which again affected her later in life, because she went to an audition and that guy comes out of the shadows like, hey baby, you remember me? And she kind of dorked out and ran away. So she, you know, this is the kind of mental state we're dealing with Saffron. So I feel like I'm just going to keep rambling on here about what happened, so I'm just going to move into question time. And what did you like about the movie?
Well, it's based off of a Korean film called 301, 302, which is The Apartment Numbers. I've not seen the original, nor have I heard of the original, but I've seen a number of Korean and modern Asian thriller horror movies, and the way this is shot, where everything's like hyper-illuminated, where all the colors really pop, like just the most nondescript set pieces in any other movie, like all of a sudden like just blow up off the screen, like the walls of the hallway of the apartment building. Her kitchen is, like you said, it's illuminated like a paper towel commercial from the 90s or something. And she's got the polka dot dress on and the super smiley face with the makeup perfectly put on every part of her face. And she's like, I'm here to do this. Bing! So that, like, definitely added to the overall weird look of the movie, which made the movie just interesting visually. I'm not usually a fan of the psychological thrillers very often, because they always try to make them all dark and dun, 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 dun. This one was done in, like I said, like a weird bread commercial sort of way. So it was, I don't know how to explain it. It was, everything felt like there should be a ping with a little sparkle at it, and then here's Heather Graham, like, with a smile, wielding this gigantic knife, and it's just so many weird... It was so... almost like the movie didn't make any sense visually. Like, it shouldn't have been so happy-looking when it was such a twisted kind of story, which made the movie interesting to watch. Heather Graham completely believable as the hyper-obsessed, aim-to-please, bubbly female character with the screaming demons behind her eyes going, kill him, kill him. Technically, she doesn't necessarily kill anyone in the movie, but she's got that look about her like, I'm so happy, while everything in her head's going, murder, death, blood, yes. Not to mention she's got a very strange and really pronounced sexual appetite, which, I'm not going to lie, she's super gorgeous, so that made her character. She just had a lot of weird dimensions to that character. She was kind of childlike with her, Saffron, she's my favorite, and then the whole trying to be the happy house. And I've never read Lady Killer, that you and Chris have raved about Lady Killer on Dark Horse Comics for months, and it's one I plan to buy when I finally whittle my pile down, which at this point is never going to happen. But all I kept thinking was, this is what I imagined the comic Lady Killer to be like. Super housewifey, happy, let's chop up vegetables and smile and cooking shows. Yay, soap operas. And at the same time at night, she's stabbing people in the neck and, you know, eating babies or whatever.
Well, I know you say, you know, she's not killing anybody, but let's face it, she clearly killed that guy's bird. And
oh, that's
then
obvious.
She cooked it and fed it to him because she had heard that he was, you know, out to dinner with a client, so she happened to go down to that restaurant because she used to work in the kitchen. So she snuck in the back, and she's peeking out, and you could obviously tell it's more than a business meeting. So she went home, and she filleted up this guy's prized bird. And then he's halfway through dinner, and he's like, wait a minute, where's Polly or whatever the hell the bird's name is? And she's like, oh, maybe he flew away. And then he's, like, looking down at the plate, and she pulls, like, a feather out of her fucking dress and then, like, just flicks it onto the table. I'm like, oh, no.
Or maybe he's covered in honey mustard.
Right. It was, yeah. Like he said, like, she killed that role. Like, it was, and when we're talking about the lighting, too, like, 90% of the time when she's cooking in the apartment alone. So she treats it as if she's preparing a meal in front of a studio audience, and they light it like she's preparing it for a studio audience. So when he comes home from work through the door, the spotlights all turn off, and the rest of the apartment lights back up, and it's like, oh my, it's almost done like a play, which is super neat. But I don't know, like, because I don't, this wasn't like something that we sat down and, like, we have to watch this, you know, it was just, we're scrolling through and we're like, I don't know, what's this? Want to do it? Sure, let's do it. You know, so it wasn't like it was a conscious decision. It was just like, yeah, let's pick this. And we're like, I don't know, it's only got 2.5 stars, but it's like still kind of short. So we, like, I don't know why this movie only got 2.5 stars. I'm just going to say right off the bat, like,
I don't either.
The movie is done really well. And when you start to get into Saffron and you start to, you know, at first, she just seems like the, you know, she's the famous actress who just wants to be left alone. You know, she doesn't want the general public pounding on her door, delivering meals every day. You know, like, she just wants to be left alone. But then they start diving into her past, and she starts finding out she has, like, some very serious eating disorder she's been dealing with her entire life. Not to mention all the anxiety from, you know, from her mother, from the alleged sexual abuse, I would assume, you know, and it's just,
I don't think it was alleged. I think it was, well, you pretty know, obvious that that happened.
You know what I mean? But it's like, you know, you're starting to realize that she's not just a recluse because she wants to be left alone. She's got some serious issues going on.
She's got eating disorder as well, because she just had that whole, do I look pretty, mommy?
Yeah.
Thing about her the whole time.
Yeah, so it's like,
chain smoking, not eating anything.
I think there's just a little more to this movie than maybe some people realize. Like, I don't know. I personally thoroughly enjoyed it, like, especially, like, when she fed that guy his bird, like, because they don't hint at any of this craziness yet.
No.
But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you mean this bird?
Other than the obvious craziness that you're like, wow, this woman's really, she's got this idea that she's a TV star that just hasn't been discovered yet. But it's kind of like implied lightly, but then she walks through this restaurant kitchen and she comes to the, like, dining room door, and she sees her fiance hand feeding his partner or his assistant like food across the table like you would if you were like married or in a relationship. All of a sudden, and this is the thing about Heather Graham, like she's got that absolute girl next door, Kool-Aid mom, super bubbly, everything's great. Look about her just naturally. So the thing about like people who are obsessed with perfection, like she's obsessed with making the perfect meal and laying the perfect dinner table out, and she likes the perfect kitchen. Like in the beginning of the movie, she's like, this countertop is 4 inches too low. It needs to be at the same height as my waistline because I like to wear heels because heels make me look like this and blah, blah, blah. The thing about perfection is the minute anything deviates from that outward desire for everything to be absolutely pristine, then all of a sudden, because it's like almost as if at least her character, she needs everything outwardly to be perfect because inside she's whoo-hoo, like she's away from just snapping. So anything outwardly that suddenly goes off course, like all of a sudden, like, oh God, the demons. So she's just totally, she's so frail emotionally that she can come unhinged at anything. And naturally she sees her fiance feeding a woman like food across the table. Like, hey, try some of my filet mignon. It's all of a sudden like, he's fucking her. Oh my God, I have to kill everybody in sight.
Well, the perfect example of the whole like pristine perfection is the very first scene that you see her and Fred are about to do it. He's like, oh, let's take this to the couch. She's like, no, let's do it right here. So he starts pushing dishes off on, you know, back on the table, which is fine. But then while they're goofing around on the table, he knocks like a plate on the ground and it shatters, and that just kills it. The entire mood is done. And she's like, oh my God, that's the perfect set. I got to glue this back together. And it, like the whole like, yeah, we're not screwing around anymore. Because you just broke a plate. Like, you know,
right, and her whole reason for wanting to stay at the kitchen table is because you can smell the lime coming from the shrimp cocktail. And it's like, okay. Like, everything, yeah, she's like, I spent so much time on this food, I still want to savor any little bit of it I can while we're doing this, because I can't just be in the moment. I have to, everything has to co-align. And that's the thing. The one thing about her, once she discovers that Fred is kind of not really faithful, she is already at this point. She knows that Saffron lives across the hall, and she's like, oh my God, she's my favorite. I watched her growing up as a child. She already wants to be friends with her, but she's kind of just like, here, I'll be nice. I'll be neighborly. But the second like Fred derails from her life, she's like, okay, I have to turn my crazy obsession all on Saffron now because she's all I have left. I have this giant apartment and all this food and no one to cook for. I have to cook for somebody. I have to be there for somebody. Somebody has to need me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saffron is pretty much like living in this cluttered apartment with movie posters of movies she was in 20 years ago and cigarette butts everywhere and her laptop there and her tablet there, and she barely ever puts on clothes, and when she does, she kind of just walks down to the docks and just paces back and forth like a person with emotional issues. And then here comes, you know, super happy, needs to please everybody, Heather Graham's Amy, with all kinds of exotic pastries. And, you know, she puts the plate down, knocks on the door. The next day she comes out, the plate's still sitting there. So now she takes that back. She tries again. And she keeps trying and harder, knocking on the door. Let me in. Can I hang out with you? Can we be best friends? Can I move in with you? I mean, she's that, like, absolutely committed to trying to make somebody think that she is great.
Yeah. And it's also to the point where, you know, she brings over, like, a rack of lamb and Saffron's like, no, I can't. I'm a vegetarian. Like, I don't eat meat. And she's like, oh, it's okay. You have never had my meat. It's like, no. Like, and I don't know if she really, honest to God, was a vegetarian, or if she was just like, I don't want to eat your food and I don't want to offend you because no matter what I eat, I'm going to throw it up kind of thing. But, yeah, they're both really good in the roles that they played in this movie.
Oh, I think Carrie Ann Moss is amazing. Like,
yeah.
She was great as like the tough as nails lawyer on Jessica Jones, and here she does the whole, you know, tortured artist with a dark secret. You know, she's submitting these articles and she's getting rejection letters going, that's more for that kind of magazine. Don't submit any more of this stuff to us. And it's weird because she's got this desperation to reclaim her former glory, and at the same time, she is committed to avoiding human contact of any kind. So she's got this total imbalance the entire movie, and she kind of just plays the whole thing with this, like, blah attitude, like, like, everything feels like a chore, everything is annoying, but deep down, everything is, like, she just doesn't trust people because her mother was, like, the worst mom in the history of planet Earth.
Right. So that all being said, is there anything that you didn't like about it?
There were a couple of... I felt like the editing was a bit clunky here and there, but nothing that detracted from the movie. But there were some things I felt like, there were moments where I was like, this would be better served as a miniseries, and then there are other times I'm like, no, this actually works as a movie because these two characters, this is the kind of story that needs to be told. To me, and he wasn't bad, he was fine in the movie, but Kevin Dillon's character was almost like a non-factor, and I think that was the point. But I honestly, there really wasn't a whole lot. I mean, I wasn't like, this is the greatest movie ever. But the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, 2 stars? Really? And I went on IMDb, it's got a 4.4 out of 10. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
If it was like a 6.6 out of 10, I'd be like, all right, I could see this, not for everybody. But it's not that. I'm like, 4.4 is for like Michael Bay movies. I'm like, this is a weird... And it's like I said, if you've even seen one weird, like any of those tartan Asian horror movies or weird psychosexual thrillers, you kind of get that this, they were trying to recreate that vibe, and there's nothing wrong with that. Because, I mean, you're not going to get most Americans to watch a movie with subtitles. So they, you know, buy the rights and try to remake it for a lazy American audience, sorry.
Although I do stand by Amelie is still probably one of my favorite movies ever.
That might be one of the rare exceptions that gets a bit more of a pass because it's so beloved even over here now that like people just have to watch it as is. I just feel like they tried to recreate the style of the original. Even I haven't seen the original, but I've seen other like movies like Old Boy or Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. They try to create that kind of subtle happy / creepy vibe, and I don't think American audiences are accustomed to it all the time, so maybe it was just a little too like wide-eyed for them, maybe. But I honestly don't understand how it got 4 out of 10 on IMDb. It just seems overly harsh. And another thing is, it's like, I watched this, and I think, again, I admittedly think Heather Graham is just beautiful beyond words. But I also think she's really super talented, and I have no idea why she's not a bigger star. Because I see some of these other actresses that, you know, are good, but not as talented, and they get bigger roles, they get more noticeable roles, and I watched both of them, Carrie Ann Moss and Heather Graham, and I'm like, how are these two not like A-list stars? I could watch them pretty much in anything at this point. So, I guess if I hated anything, I hate the fact that, not hate, but I'm confused by the fact that Heather Graham's not a bigger star than she is.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm looking through her stuff now, and it's just, you know, I mean,
it's like Hallmark movies that I've never heard of.
In 2014, she did a fairly decent amount of stuff, plus being on, you know, Californication for the last final season or whatever was kind of awesome. But like 2015, she did 2 TV movies and a video game voiceover. Like, come. I don't know, whatever. That's beside the point. Yeah, I actually hate to be that guy because, you know, whatever, but there's really nothing about this that I didn't like. Like, and again, not that it wasn't a, you know, a grand slam or anything, but there was just nothing bad about it. It did and presented itself exactly the way it was supposed to, I feel. Like, I hate to be that guy, but there's nothing I can honestly say I hated about it.
Right, and without giving away the ending was vague and yet suggestive and...
Awesome.
I was like, this is actually a pretty good ending. Like, almost Alfred Hitchcockian, if that's a word.
Yeah, and I didn't want to touch too much on the ending either, but I did want to bring up, like, you know, she... Okay, so after a while, Saffron does break down, and her and...
Amy.
Her and Amy do become good friends. There's that, you know, she opens up to her. They actually, she allows, you know, Amy to make her dinner, and literally she was only able to do it because she talked her into, you know, I'll let you make me some kind of a broth. Like, that's literally, it was just like a ginger soup broth. That's about it. She had like two spoonfuls and was like, all right, I'm full. Let's run lines because I've got to practice. Okay, you know, and it was, they actually became pretty close.
Ish.
And, well, because when Detective Reynolds, which is Joe Mantegna, whatever, when he's questioning Amy, she's like, yeah, we really didn't know each other. Like, I knew she was there, but, you know, I mean, we had dinner once in a while. That was about it, which was clearly not the case. But she played it off like she didn't really know her that well. And here she is. She's missing, and she doesn't seem to care. And the way they... I guess explain that away is, I thought, pretty genius. I don't know. Because you figure, I'm just used to so many movies where, like, by the time the end of the movie comes, you already know what's going to happen, and then they tell you anyway just to make sure you didn't miss it. But I feel like they left it vague here, but you can't, like, you know what happened. But they never...
They nudge you in that direction to where, like, man, I hope that's not what happened, but if it is, it's super weird, but kind of awesome at the same time.
It's like, I hope that wouldn't be it, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. That's exactly how I left this film, and I was like, that was a great ending. Like, I wouldn't, and that's another thing, that, you know, would I change anything? There's nothing I would change. I can't really think of anything I would change about it. Again, not a perfect movie, but for the movie that it was pretty perfect. Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, for a movie that involves, like, weird disappearing people and potential murder, this is a completely bloodless movie. Nobody gets harmed on screen at all. So they leave all of the grisly details up to your imagination, which is kind of a genius way to make a faux horror movie at this point, because everything in horror has to be some painting coming to life or some creepy doll that turns into a demon or blood everywhere, and this movie had none of that. Like I said, it felt like if they made a Wonder Bread commercial into a psychosexual thriller, but nobody dies that you know of. There's one scene that's, you know, not going to be for everybody, and you could kind of take what we said earlier in this podcast and extrapolate what that scene would be between Saffron and a certain scumbag. But even that, it's not like super graphic. It's there and it's, you know, horrifying to watch. But that's about the most horrifying on-screen moment in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a lot where it feels like people think that there's, like, a lot of sex in this movie, or it's, like, part of the huge part of the story. It's absolutely not. Like,
it is.
There's a handful of scenes, but it's nothing, like, out of the ordinary, and it's nothing that would make me feel like the movie is about it.
I feel like it was at least a sizable component, but it wasn't the main focus of the movie.
Meh.
The main focus is, like, obsession over perfection.
Yeah.
And that is part of it, but it's not the main ingredient of that either. So, I don't know. There were really, if you think about it, there were three sex scenes in the movie. And none of them were super gratuitous. They were actually kind of awkward, mostly.
And none of them lasted more than a couple of, you know, 10, 15 seconds.
The last one lasted probably about 2 or 3 minutes, but yeah. Again.
But again, you didn't see anything.
This wasn't like nudity and butts and...
Yeah, you see people kiss. About all you're going to see, and then some gyrating maybe, but...
Yeah, and two of those three scenes had food attached to them, so...
Right,
and yeah. I don't mean that in like the porno stick a donut in my ass kind of way.
Just had to take it there.
I'm just saying. I mean, it was an R, but it's not like... It wasn't 50 Shades of Grey. It was pretty tame by that measure.
Well, from what I heard, that movie was pretty tame too, but I'll never know because I'll never watch that garbage.
Yeah, so if you're a fan, please feel free to do a podcast on it and send it to us and we'll...
I won't listen to that either.
I won't listen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're pretty much ready to throw a number on this and move on. Yay, nay?
Yeah, I mean, it's not... Super. Yeah, I'm pretty much ready for that.
I'm torn a little bit, but I'm gonna go 7.5. I was thinking 8, but like maybe if I watch it a time or two again. But it's, and I'm not saying like it's maybe not worth it, but it is an absolute solid 7.5. I would absolutely watch this again.
I kind of feel this is a movie that if I was with a person who had never seen it, I might go, oh, there's this kind of quirky movie that you might like. Let's watch this. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd ever watch it again myself. Maybe if I saw it again and really liked it more the second time. But I'd give it a 7. It's definitely worth at least one viewing, if for no other reason, Carrie Ann Moss and Heather Graham are amazing in it. Or okay, let's maybe not amazing, but they're both really good in it. Oh, I mean, they're not like Oscar-worthy amazing in it, but they're pretty good. It's way better than people are giving it credit for, and I don't want to assume that people don't get it, but maybe people just don't get it.
Yeah. Or just a lot of people are just not used to that style of movie because they watch Michael Bayness. I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know. Somebody tried to talk me into American Sniper yesterday, and I was like, oh, God, I got to go home and cry.
So, a random question about the movie. Fred seemed to be annoyed by Amy's elaborate meals and dinner display every night after work to the point where he was turned off to sexual contact. What one thing about Amy would bother you if you were Fred?
I think her insistence on bringing food to the neighbors would get old, because it wouldn't be like don't waste good food on her. It'd be more like the woman she's a recluse, or she just don't bother them. I'm kind of the if I encounter the neighbors and we naturally organically become friendly, then that's fine, but let's not force ourselves on anybody. So I'd be like, will you stop making food for her or him or whoever lives there? Just let it be. If you're running into them in the hallway, say hello, and then you let the relationship grow. I hate it when people try to force a relationship on somebody. And I don't mean like a dating or any kind of relationship. Like, if I moved into a neighborhood and all the neighbors started like storming the front door with cake and pie and pork chops in a bag, I'd be like, what are you doing? I just moved in. I just want to watch MacGyver and go to bed. So
I feel like the neighbors only got involved when things fell apart with Fred. For the most part.
Oh, no, she turned up the volume big time. But even before, she was still leaving cookies and, ooh, I got
this. When Fred said he wasn't interested in oral pleasures that evening and he just was too tired and I want to go to bed because she wanted him to eat the pastries while she gobbled something else. And he was like, oh, God, will you just stop? And that's when she started with the food. Whatever. Doesn't matter. I get your point. This is a tough one because, let's face it, I mean, if I made the kind of money and met the kind of girl that all she wanted to do was go to the market every single day, buy the absolute best ingredients, and cook an amazing meal for us, and then, you know, top the evening off with sex, like, what's the... What? What? Is there to complain about? I got nothing. Although, if we were in the throes of passion on the kitchen table and I broke a dish and she stopped, I'd probably be a little pissed. I'd be like, dude, I will break all of these fucking dishes.
Oh, there you go. Abusive boyfriend now.
I didn't say I was going to break
them. I'll break these dishes over your head.
Right?
I'll break your fucking arms.
Whoa. But I don't know. I mean, I don't really think there was anything that was... She might have been a little too bubbly. That might have got on my nerves, if you know, once in a while. But for the most part...
I could use some positivity and bubbly in my life right about
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I'm going to go ahead and say, bring it on. Just don't cook my dog, because I'll be super upset. But I'm not the kind of guy that would cheat, so I guess we're good. So,
oh, you say that now.
Well, I mean, I have a perfect track record, so I mean, I guess I'm good. All right. Amy was obsessed with the art of food and cooking. If you lived with Amy, what other three obsessions could she have that would enhance your relationship? Number one for me, board games.
I'm going to have to second that one because, yeah, if I live with a woman and I came home and she's like, I set up Arkham Horror for us, I'd be like, you're the best. Why don't we just get married today? Oh, we already got married? Why don't we do it again? Let's get second married because you're the best.
A second obsession. I suppose if she was obsessed with, coffee and books because they kind of go together with the whole... You know, bookstore with coffee shop.
I could see that.
Because I'm kind of obsessed with it, so nailed it.
I was thinking if she was a super talented artist, that was gonna be mine. That would be, like, if I came home and she was painting or drawing, like, it might inspire me to try and be more creative with other free time I have. And, I don't know, maybe we would collaborate on some kind of illustrated book or comic or something together.
Oh, you just want to write her coattails.
I do the writing, she does the drawing, she tells me what to write, she does the drawing, I put my name on it for pity, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say similar, not because I want to work collaboratively with her, I do have a decent amount of free time that I should fill up with, you know, painting and drawing and stuff, but I haven't done it in a while. I was on a good kick there for a couple of months, a couple of years ago, and then I just, when I finished the last piece, I just never started another one. But a lot of that was like, I didn't know what to do next, but now I do have some ideas. I just got to sit down and start working on them. That's all. Nailed it.
My third one would be she would be really good at, like, synthesizers, keyboards, and maybe even piano. And
well, I mean, that's all kind of one and the same.
No, piano is one thing, but to, like, know different kind of synthesizer effects and so on. Like, if she's like, let's start a band, it sounds like King Crimson with no vocalist, I'd be like, you're the best. Let's find a way to be immortal so we can just make annoying music and bother people with it forever. I don't know, because I feel like I really want to start playing drums again, and I'm hoping that things work out in the next month or so for that to happen. It would be cool to come home and play drums and have the other person not only be into it in any sort of way, but also be like, hold on, let me get my Hammond organ. And next thing you know, we're like coming up with Deep Purple Machine Head Part 2, which would be kind of rad. And maybe like her brother is like Richie Blackmore, and the next thing you know, we're starting the greatest 70s rock band in the history of 2016.
Nailed it.
He's got like a woolly mammoth vest with no shirt on and a massive amount of chest hair and bell bottoms, and he can solo like a man.
You don't have to make it weird.
I'm a Richie Blackmore fan. What do you want?
Well, I think that's pretty much going to wrap us up for the week. I would like to tell you what we're going to do for next week, but we haven't gotten that far in life yet. So, until next time, have a good week.